Do you know when you're in the pub and an old football match comes on, a rocket of a shot hits the bar and bounces out? And then somebody says, do you ever wonder what would have happened if that had gone in? Imagine if we'd scored that. What if we'd won that game?
Then everyone has an opinion. Well, the manager would probably have kept his job. We could have gone in to win the league that year. Ah, we still would have messed it up. We were shite anyway. Such fine margins that could have potentially massive consequences.
In this series, we look at some of the biggest what-ifs in football history. What happened? What could easily have played out very differently? And what we think might have happened instead. This is Outside the Box.
The 1988 UEFA European Championship Final.
And here's Robins. And did it get the deflection? Was it Robins or Pierce?
Attention. Attention, Kostadinov.
What is it?
Yes. No. No, the linesman says no. The linesman says no.
I think they should really stop flogging a dead horse, basically. It's over. It's finished.
Ireland skipper Roy Keane has been sent home from the World Cup. This has been confirmed by manager Mick McCarthy at a news conference in Saipan within the past hour.
2-2, Spain have one in hand. Mendieta, Spanish goal, Irish heartbreak.
What if Roy Keane had stayed in Ireland's squad for the 2002 World Cup? Hello and welcome again to Outside the Box, the football podcast that looks at various what-ifs throughout history. I'm Dave Fleming, and joining me, as always, is Mr. Jared O'Shea. Jared, hello.
Hi, Dave. Well, we did it. We went there. It was always inevitable that it was going to happen, that Saipan was going to rear its ugly head, and we got only a handful of episodes in, and we decided to tackle that beast.
I have sent him home.
There is scarcely a single word that could instantly stir up in Ireland feelings of passion, anger, and division than the word Saipan. The Pacific Ocean island, the largest of the Mariana Islands and site of one of the major campaigns of World War II, is known in this country for one thing and one thing only. It is the location where, on the eve of the 2002 Football World Cup in Japan and South Korea, Captain Roy Keane departed the Ireland squad.
Still the heartbeat of an all-conquering Manchester United team, at 30 years of age, Keane was very much in his pomp. He was one of few, probably the only, world-class player in the Irish squad, and had been instrumental in qualifying the team for their third ever World Cup finals. Whether Keane walked or was kicked out, jumped or was pushed, whether the fault lay with him or with manager Mick McCarthy remains a very touchy subject, even now, nearly 20 years later. But back in 2002, it was close to a sporting civil war.
Politicians got involved. Television presenters pleaded passionately for a resolution. Friends and families were divided. The whole world tuned in to see how it would be resolved. In the end, Keane stayed away. He walked his dog for hours and hours as his former teammates fell in the last 16 of the tournament on penalties to Spain.
The team performed actually quite well. They got out of a difficult group. They scored in every game of a major tournament for the first time, and they went through a major tournament unbeaten for the first time. Ultimately, however, they would advance no further than they had at the 1994 World Cup.
But what if Keane had remained part of the squad? What if the falling out had never happened or been resolved more quickly, and Ireland's best player had led the team to the finals? How might Ireland have done? Might they have gone further in the tournament? Is there any chance it could have been worse? What if Roy Keane had stayed in Ireland's squad for the 2002 World Cup?
We're very excited to welcome our guest this week to discuss what might have been in this particularly tantalising what if. He's an author and a former sports writer who covered the 2002 World Cup in South Korea and Japan for the Sunday Tribune. He's the author of the excellent book, The Gaffers, which looks closely at the relationship between Mick McCarthy and Roy Keane in the years before and leading up to the World Cup in 2002. And he's best known as the creator of the massively successful and very excellent Ross O'Carroll Kelly. We're delighted to welcome Mr. Paul Howard. Paul, hello, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Very well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I, to be honest, like this is one of those subjects I've tortured myself with over the years, you know, one of those what if things. So it's a great relief to me to tease it all out after 20 years because I have indulged in this game for so many years now.
I think, yeah, this will probably be, as three Irish men and three stout Irish supporters, it'll probably be a bit of group therapy going on here to talk. I want to look a little bit at, first thing, actually, Ger, if you want to tell us what this podcast is not going to be.
Yeah, but what this is not is what there have been thousands of books and millions of probably column inches and radio and TV time, even a musical about it, covering the actual Saipan falling out. We're not interested here in getting into the blame of who said what to who and whose fault was it and who was it up to apologise and was he sent home, did he walk? That's been done. We're sort of more interested in what if it hadn't happened. So I'm sure there'll be times we will invariably drift into, oh, but if only this had happened instead. But we'll try to get ourselves back on the straight and narrow of what if it hadn't happened, but tantalizing and all as it is, to go back over that old ground of nearly 20 years ago.
Paul, you, like we said in the intro there, you were you the chief sports writer for the Sunday Tribune at the time, so you would have been covering Ireland quite regularly and quite closely. I kind of just want to ask you, I was 17, 18 myself at the time. My memories of particularly the Holland game and the Portugal game was that it was in the qualifiers that it was absolute seat of the pants stuff, that how we didn't concede seemed miraculous and that we got a plucky win. But I kind of want to ask you, how good actually was that Ireland team? And in a more specific sense, I suppose, how good was Roy Keane at that time?
Well, I think the team, Roy Keane was right when he said we were a lot better than we gave ourselves credit for. Thinking back, when you think, especially compared to the players we have now, you know, back then, 20 years ago, we had, you know, Shay Given, who was certainly one of the best shot stoppers in England. You know, if he didn't command his penalty area as well as other goalkeepers did, he certainly was a great shot stopper. We had three members of that great Leeds team that reached the semi-finals of the Champions League, and Gary Kelly, Ian Hart, the two fullbacks, and then Robbie Keane up front. As backup fullback, we had Steve Finnan, who was coming through, you know, it was really emerging, would win a European Champions League medal with Liverpool within 3 years. Centre halves, Staunton, vastly experienced, Gary Breen, with Kenny Cunningham as backup, probably lacked quite a bit of pace there, but lots of experience. Midfield, you know, Roy Keane, probably the most influential midfielder of his generation, at the absolute top of his game in those years. And, you know, alongside him, you know, Mark Hinsler, Matt Holland. On the wings, you've got McAteer on one and Damien Duff on the other. With Kevin Kilbane and Mark Kennedy as your backup wingers. And then, you know, like I said, Robbie Keane and Niall Quinn up front. I mean, we take it now. I mean, they're not world beaters, but they were all playing Premier League football at the time. And so it was a very, very good team. Mick McCarthy had spent his first couple of years as manager, I think, talking about, like Stephen Kenny is now, about the need to rebuild. And I don't think it was any way near as drastic a rebuild needed during Mick McCarthy's time. He had lots of really good players coming through. And this was kind of the theme of the campaign, really, of that qualifying campaign. I mean, you mentioned there about the seat of the pants results we got against Holland and Portugal. I mean, I don't really remember the home match against Portugal as being seat of the pants. The home game against the Netherlands, you know, how they didn't win 5-0, I don't know, but they were denied a blatant penalty. They finished the match with four strikers on the pitch, you know, including Ruud van Nistelrooy, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, Patrick Kluivert, you know, all failing by millimetres to find the net. We rode our luck in that game, but the away match, the first match in the group in Amsterdam, Ireland were 2-0 up and really should have won. And they squandered this lead and finished 2-2. And what was really interesting in the aftermath of that match was that Mick McCarthy, the manager, looked on it as a 0.1, and Roy Keane, the captain, was in no doubt that it was 2 points lost. And this kind of contrast between the two you'd say, sort of senior figures around the Ireland team, the manager and the captain, was what defined that campaign. There was sort of Mick McCarthy's approach, which, you might call it a carrot, and Keane's was all stick. So when McCarthy was inclined to look on the positives, Keane was sort of looking on the negatives, and that was what really drove that team on. But that tension between them, you know, that I kind of think the tension was really, that friction was really the energy that that qualifying campaign existed on. That's what drove them apart eventually.
Lennon facing Cocoon. And a little cross in there, and it's come through here. McAteer! Amsterdam revisited. There has been agony this afternoon. Now there is ecstasy. Jason McAteer, Mick McCarthy's big gamble, gets the goal. Ireland hit the front. Holland had to score twice.
It was a really, really tough qualifying group. I mean, if you think, like, you know, Holland and Portugal to start with, you know, one team to qualify automatically and one to go in via the playoffs. And then the rest of the group was, you know, Estonia, who were quite good, Cyprus and Andorra. And, you know, to finish that campaign, to edge out Holland and to finish level on points with Portugal by the end of that was an incredible achievement for that team.
It really was. Like, the results were incredible. I think we were the highest points total of any team not to qualify automatically, I think, undefeated in a group like that. And yeah, only three draws and all the rest of the games were wins. Like, yeah, the record was absolutely.
There were no stupid like cock-ups along the way. Like, you know, they put away Estonia, Cyprus and Andorra home and away. Like, that's the important thing. Like, you know, they won all of those matches. With Keane, I mean, really sometimes dragged there by Roy Keane. I remember the Cyprus match and the stadium was kind of half empty, like, you know, so you could kind of hear everything that was being said on the pitch. And Roy Keane just spent the entire match bollocking his teammates. It was amazing to listen to, you know, and you kind of got a sense there that here's a man who is essentially taking over the running of this team, right? Mick McCarthy is picking the team, but Roy Keane is running the team. Roy Keane is administering the bollockings like he did at Manchester United. Ireland beat Cyprus 4-0, which kind of sounds like a, you know, an easy win, but it wasn't. And Ireland could easily have drawn that match. Roy Keane scored two of the goals himself, like, and he didn't score a huge number of goals in his career, so to score two in one match kind of tells you how influential he was in that game. But this was kind of part of what Keane was doing at the time. If you remember off the field, he did an interview with Paul Kimmage around that time, in which he talked about how the FAI officials were sitting in first class while the players were in economy class when they were traveling to matches. And he said, you know, you've got 6'4", 6'5" Niall Quinn sitting jackknifed in his tiny little chair, you know, for a 4 or 5 hour flight. And he said it wasn't good enough and we have to start setting higher standards for the players and setting higher standards for ourselves. And this begins off the field with how we're treated. And after this interview appeared, instantly things improved. The officials moved to economy. The players were moved up to first class. And we were on those flights. So we can see this instantly. We would usually be sitting like a few rows away from the players. And suddenly the players are out of sight. They're behind the curtain. And we're sitting, the officials are back with us. And this was hugely significant, like as significant as anything that happened on the pitch. Because Keane was looking to set new standards for everybody and everything. And This was that ambition manifest. It was there. We could see it. But it kind of undermined Mick McCarthy a little bit because you have a manager who apparently wasn't able to win these concessions for the players. And Roy Keane does one interview and suddenly everything changes. So I think there was a sense of a power shift going on there as well.
Not a lot of people say that it's typical of Roy, and Roy should really shut up, but I can't, especially if I'm captain of the team.
when you mentioned about like Cyprus and Estonia, again, I was probably 20-ish, 1920 during this campaign, and, you know, watching us sort of as a fan on TV more than, you know, not following the team around Europe. But I kind of always had a sense that they were the games really where Keane was vital, because there's a certain sense, you kind of think, well, you know, Portugal and Holland are the big games that get the headlines, but actually the bread and butter of going away to Cyprus and ensuring you got the job done, it was games like that. And I had this awful worry about the Iran playoff that was probably irrational because he was out of it, that it would be a game that they'd go away, they'd concede a goal early, and they'd have gone there with the mindset, job done. And just when you needed somebody to take control, he'd be missing. Now, it didn't turn out that way, but it was always something about that I felt he lent that team.
Yeah, I mean, actually, as it happened, I think we could easily have messed up against Iran. I think we conceded a late goal. We won the home leg 2-0. And Roy Keane had an agreement with Mick McCarthy that if they got a positive result in the first leg, he wouldn't have to go to Tehran for the second leg. So he considered 2-0 a positive result. You know, two goals, didn't concede an away goal. And we went to Tehran and, you know, it's 0-0 for most of the match. And then close to the end, we conceded a goal. And I remember the atmosphere in the stadium changing. There was a real sense that, you know, Iran just had to get one more goal in the last 2 or 3 minutes. And then suddenly we're looking at extra time and probably penalties. And it was a really, really hostile atmosphere in the stadium as well. And that could easily have gone wrong. But yeah, you're right. Winning those away matches and the home matches, I don't know how often we've done that in a campaign, kind of beating all of the non-seeded teams home and away. But that was very, very important. But then Keane was just as important in the big matches against Portugal and the Netherlands. I mean, the Portuguese away match, you know, Ireland, they were under the cosh for most of it, but got a draw that they probably didn't deserve. The home match, I remember Luis Figo, Rui Costa were just outstanding that day. But it wasn't like the home match against the Netherlands. We weren't under that much pressure. I thought, you know, Roy Keane was probably the second best player on the day to Luis Figo. But he was just outstanding that day as well. Just really brilliant. And then the home match against Holland, which was kind of the match that really sort of secured the playoff. I know we played Cyprus afterwards, but the home match against Holland, you know, Holland had to win there. That was a great Dutch team. And, you know, Gary Kelly got sent off in the second half. And it just, all of the signs were saying, we're going to lose this. And, you know, we're under the hammer. And, you know, Roy Keane first takes the ball down the pitch and Steve Finnan puts the cross in and Jason McAteer just buries it. And then it was just holding on for I don't know how long it was, maybe 20 minutes or something, but it was, nobody could quite believe it at the end, but Roy Keane could. That was the extraordinary thing. I think when the players were celebrating, you know, there's this great image of Roy Keane walking off the field and Mick McCarthy running after him to shake his hand. And to Keane, it's just like another day at the office. It's like nothing amazing has happened here. You know, we've just beaten the Netherlands.
Yeah, we should be. No, but it's very much the attitude of we should be beating these teams. In terms of, there was a paragraph that in the Gaffer's, actually, I was reading it over the weekend again, and talking about how good he is as a player. And it's obviously something that you were writing at the time. So, you know, it's a very contemporary view of it. And you talk about, you know, Zidane and Figo and Rivaldo and all these players. And then not since Diego Maradona has a player won so many important games on his own. Maradona did it with the sheer witchery of his skills. Keane does it by the force of his desire. He is Manchester United's and Ireland's best defender and best attacker, the one player whose absence diminishes both sides.
Yeah.
So that's the player he was.
Yeah, because I think when we go on to actually talk about what might have been or what might have gone differently, I think whatever we agree or disagree on, I think particularly with kind of, you know, Roy Keane is very much, he's a TV personality now, he's a pundit, and there might be some... We might have some younger listeners, perhaps, who might listen to this and maybe just aren't aware just how good a player he actually was, that he was genuinely world class, not just because of his attitude, but his footballing ability was out of this world as well. He was a remarkable, remarkable player.
His understanding of the game, the way he read the game, just his lack of, you know, lack of fear, his physicality, his ability to pick out a pass. I mean, what was extraordinary about Roy Keane. It was kind of the sum of lots of very good talents. Like he wasn't, but he wasn't the best at any single thing, you could argue. You know, there was, maybe he was the best tacker at Manchester United, maybe not, but, you know, he wasn't the best header of the ball. He wasn't the best passer of the ball. But what he had added up to more than anybody else had. And that desire, I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, in the modern game, it's one of those things we don't talk about as much anymore, desire, because there are very few players nowadays who can kind of bring a team somewhere by sheer force of their will. Like Cristiano Ronaldo, you see him against Ireland. He's one of those players. He could do that, like a minute to go, 1-0 down, and they win 2-1 because one man just doesn't believe they're beaten. And you could see it any time Keane was missing from the United team, you know, when he had his cruciate ligament injury in the 90s. And then when he kind of, when age started to catch up with him, when his knee was troubling him later on in his career, you could just see that United were a different team, you know. And when he was gone, they had to completely change their approach to the game, you know. They had to kind of find a way of playing without Roy Keane rather than find a replacement for Roy Keane, because there just wasn't one.
Probably as good a point as any to go, right, so how would Ireland have done? So, yeah. You know, I, without going back over what we don't want to discuss, it probably is slightly different whether the blowout in Saipan never happens and you have the Keane who, you know, maybe a little bit disgruntled, but puts the head down and gets on with it. Or I think the suggestion, Paul, in your book, that, you know, he'd be given the dispensation to skip Saipan and join up with the team in Japan. There's that version, or there's the Tommy Gorman interview works and Keane ends up back with the squad. They possibly do play out slightly differently depending on those. But in a world in which Ireland are heading out to play Cameroon and he's in centre midfield, how do we...
Yeah. Well, this is interesting, right? Well, first of all, I think it's how does he come back? I think the second scenario we mentioned there was, you know, post the Tommy Gorman interview, that Bertie Ahern sends him back to Japan on the government jet. I don't think that would work. I don't think that would have worked, because I think he would have been absolutely exhausted. I've done that trip, London to Tokyo, two or three times, and it absolutely wrecked me. I was exhausted for a few days after landing. And Roy Keane had only just arrived back. He'd flown to Saipan. He'd only just arrived back. And you're talking about a sort of 2 or 3 day turnaround to fly back there again. I don't know. I definitely think that would have affected him.
Well, what about all the little kids in Ireland who have you as a role model, who love you, who would love to see you back in the World Cup, and who are absolutely appalled that this row has taken place and don't know what to say?
Exactly. Well, do you think I've enjoyed the last few days?
What would we have done? Would we have beaten Cameroon? Quite possibly. Cameroon were a great team. We probably didn't, you know, give them enough credit at the time for how good they were, but they were African champions. On paper, I think they were probably better than us. You know, they had Samuel Eto'o, who, you know, was one of the best strikers in the world. You know, he moved to Barcelona a couple of years after the World Cup and scored 108 goals in 144 games for them. They had Jeremy, who won two European Champions Leagues with Real Madrid, nominated for the Ballon d'Or on the right side of midfield. I mean, they had some really, really good players. We were dealing with not just the absence of Keane, but the loss of Jason McAteer, actually. I mean, that match, you know, I think McAteer was a big loss. He got injured in a friendly against Hiroshima just before the tournament, and he played against Cameroon, even though he was quite clearly injured, almost cost Ireland a goal or two in the first half, got himself booked, and at halftime, Mick McCarthy had seen enough. But he had to kind of change things around. And Mark Kennedy had got injured before the tournament, so he didn't have cover, really have cover for McAteer on that wing. So he had to move, move Gary Kelly up to the right side of midfield and bring on Steve Finnan. So kind of blunted one of our attacking options, really, you know, by playing Gary Kelly. Gary Kelly did quite well, but, you know, he wasn't a right-sided midfielder. But I think our the thing that Roy Keane couldn't have fixed in that match was the weaknesses we had at the, you know, in the middle of defence. Steve Staunton was playing there as a makeshift centre half. Mick McCarthy liked him there. I always thought he was an accident waiting to happen, and it happened in that match. I mean, Eto made a bit of a fool of him out in the byline, I remember, and pulled the ball back to Patrick Mboma, who scored from, I don't know, 5 or 10 yards out. But Staunton was badly at fault. So straight away, we're chasing that match. You know, we're 1-0 down and we're chasing that match. McCarthy made the changes at halftime. You know, 5 or 6 minutes into the second half, you know, we get a goal back and Matt Holland scores from just outside the D. Brilliant finish, kind of low and hard and just past the keeper. But it's another draw. You know, it's another one. It's another one of Ireland's favourite results, you know, a 1-1 draw having come from a goal down. But interestingly, I mean, we could have won that match. I mean, Robbie Keane hit the post close to the end, I remember. But whether we'd won that match or not, and Roy Keane said in his autobiography that that was the match that was winnable, the likelihood is we still would have finished second in the group to Germany. It didn't, you know, it didn't affect our place in the group at all, because Germany, that set, you know, Germany, whether the night before or the day after or something, beat Saudi Arabia 8-0. And we were never going to beat Saudi Arabia 8-0. So they had already sort of established a sort of superior goal difference. And so even if we had beat Cameroon, we still would have finished second in the group.
We're ruling out the possibility that we could have beaten Germany?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I kind of think that match might have been winnable. Yeah, they weren't it wasn't a great German team, even though they reached the final. You know, they had... You know, they had Balak. I mean, Balak was really, you know, that was really the star of that team. He really drove them on. And, you know, when he got suspended for the final, I don't think it was any coincidence that you know, they were pretty abject in the final and Brazil just rolled over them. But I kind of thought early in the tournament, it would have been, you know, we could possibly have got a better result against them. But it was the same thing. We started really well and then conceded a goal really against, you know, Miroslav Klose, who was just on fire in that tournament. But the goal was kind of against the run of play, really, you know. And then once again, we're kind of on the back foot, you know, we're spending the match looking for an equalizer rather than looking for a winner. And that one, of course, went all the way to the end. I mean, I don't remember Ireland having loads of chances. They had lots of possession, but I don't remember, you know, lots of clearances off the line or anything like that. I think, you know, Germany were happy to sit back and absorb the pressure until 2 minutes into injury time and Robbie Keane.
Forward it goes again by Kinsella. Quinn heads on. Oh, surely this time for Keane. And Ireland do it. Robbie Keane in the second minute of stoppage time has scored the equaliser. Look at these scenes.
I think Roy Keane could definitely have made the difference on the pitch in that match. I think that's one of those games where we could have it could have been a different result. I think Ireland could have possibly won that game. But then, like I said, you know, they conceded after 20 minutes, I think it was. And when you concede that early, it just changes the whole dynamic of the game. It becomes, again, another one of those Ireland, you know, grab another heroic 1-1 victory.
Yeah, and there's every possibility you put Keane into it. He has the extra qualities, that extra force of will, and maybe they knock on the door more and harder, but still only one of them goes in.
I don't know. The thing I remember most about that match was it was really the arrival of Robbie Keane and Damien Duff as a real force, because they were so young then, you know, but they were just so lively up front as well. And they completely bamboozled the German defence, you know. It was Metzelder and Ramelow were the the center backs for Germany, and they couldn't handle it. You know, they were just everywhere, and Duff kept drifting out to the wing, and it kind of vindicated McCarthy's decision. I mean, it was kind of forced on him really, because Niall Quinn couldn't play 90 minutes anymore. So the Quinn Keane partnership that worked so well in the qualifiers, that was done and dusted. And rather than, you know, find another big man to put up front with Robbie Keane, he moved Damien Duff up there and played Kilbane on the wing and on one wing and McAteer on the other for the first match anyway. And this kind of vindicated his decision. I don't know. I think with Roy Keane and the team commanding midfield, I think that result could have been different.
Yeah, actually, for me as well, that's the game that because I remember watching it in Murray's, or I think it was Fraser's on O'Connell Street at the time, and Oliver Kahn did have to make a couple of outrageous saves in that game. I think he'd won from Duff and he'd won from Robbie Keane, and it was one of those where you just got the feeling, oh Jesus, we're never going to score here. But the one thing that Roy Keane was not always able to prevent, and it happened a few times in qualifying as well, was, you mentioned it there a few minutes ago as well, Paul, is that there were daft mistakes in our defence, quite regular, just lapses in concentration. Was, you had a brilliant line in the Gaffers where you said Ian Hart suffered from another one of his bouts of narcolepsy. Like, it was just, it was something that would happen, that I think even with Keane on the team, the goal we conceded against Cameroon, something like that is still liable to happen. And Germany had Bosa up front and Balak in midfield, they're still, because I think Balak got the ball because, was it Gary Kelly decided to go on a mazy run and gave the ball away? Like, it was, there was stupid mistakes that were quite relevant. It's the kind of the problem that we're dealing with in this what if scenario is that Ireland did actually probably play way better than anyone thought they would without him, and actually did quite well. So
yeah,
what he would have actually brought to that team.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I just remembering this match, and I did watch some of the highlights before I came on here tonight. It wasn't like we were better than Germany or that we were better than Cameroon. You know, I think on paper they were probably both better than us. Even like I said, it wasn't a vintage German team, but I think they were still better than us. So a draw in each of those two games wasn't a bad result, but it was just that little bit extra that Roy Keane gave you. It was kind of the extra 10% he could get out of every player. If you think of the player that Jason McAteer was when he played on the same team as Roy Keane, it was completely different to, you know, any other. McAteer spent most of his career really kind of underachieving. Like he underachieved at Liverpool, he underachieved at Blackburn, you know. Yeah. And the times when McAteer looked an absolutely outstanding, not an outstanding player, but a very, very good player, was when Roy Keane was shouting at him, you know, when he was playing on the same team as Roy Keane, and Roy Keane was just, you know, exhorting him to give more. And you could say that about so many players on that Ireland team. They just were better. Like, you know, Mark Kinsella was better. Matt Holland was better. They were all just better players when they played alongside him. They would say that themselves.
How much of that do we, or I mean, will we ever know? Did they take with them into the games when he wasn't playing? I mean, did he improve them that they then learned and took it on themselves, or did they need him there as the constant voice in their ears?
I think they needed him there as the constant voice. I don't think he was setting markers for them to follow in his absence. I think he really, it kind of needed his presence for this thing to work, you know. I mean, the theme of the Gaffers is that, the reason it's called the Gaffers is that Ireland went into that World Cup with two bosses, Keane and McCarthy, and there was all this, always this tension between them as to who actually delivered qualification for Ireland. And, you know, I think Ireland would have qualified without McCarthy as captain, but with, or without McCarthy as manager, but with Keane as captain. But I don't think it would have happened the other way around. I don't think we would have qualified without Roy Keane. I don't think I'm saying anything, you know, that's deeply shocking by saying that. I mean, you only just have to look at, you know, when Keane was missing for that second playoff against Iran, how, you know, how much the performance levels dropped off and how close we came to losing that match. And that was kind of lost in the euphoria of the moment of, you know, we've qualified for our first World Cup for 8 years. What was lost in the euphoria of the moment was how close we came to not qualifying, how close we came to copying this up. And that's because Roy Keane wasn't there.
And we now move past the end of the second minute of added time. The final whistle sounds. Ireland are on their way to the Far East.
It was over. The dream had become a reality. No wonder Mick McCarthy and his team were dancing with delight.
Final score in Tehran, 1-0 to Iran, but the result that matters, the aggregate score. Iran 1, Ireland 2, and Ireland on the way to the World Cup.
So, are we... We talked about the Cameroon game and the Germany game, and we're saying that with Keane in the team, we think that there's a chance that we might have gotten a better result in one of those games. But maybe on the probability, there's still mistakes in the team. We still conceded early and we're chasing the game. It's possible, if not quite likely, that a 1-1 draw in both of those games is actually probably the most realistic outcome. Are we saying something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, we can sort of dream and say, look, anything was possible with Roy Keane and the team. You know, we could have had a Stuttgart moment or a Giant Stadium moment. I mean, that was kind of what was really lacking at that tournament. You know, we didn't take a scalp, and we might well have with Roy Keane and the team. But my feeling is that 2-1 draws is probably what we would have got had Roy Keane been on the field as well, because, you know, those defensive errors, you know, they're not going to not happen just because Roy Keane is there.
Yeah, and we weren't, even with him in the team, we weren't battering teams. We were winning games 1-0 or 2-1. So the margin for error for those mistakes, you know, they could have happened.
Yeah.
I think Saudi Arabia, yeah. Can we say we win anyway?
Yeah, I think we probably would have won with less terror. I think because that was a shocking, shocking Saudi Arabia team. But we still kind of were really nervous for about 50, 60 minutes of that game before we got the second goal. I think we would have won it more comfortably. But yeah, I think we would have won that game.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I didn't, you know, there was nothing. Saudi Arabia had absolutely nothing that was going to trouble us.
I saw the replay of I was watching the highlights as well beforehand, and Robbie Keane's goal when... was it Kelly or looped the ball into the centre, and he's standing there waiting to volley it. And there's three Saudi Arabia defenders just standing in front of him, no one closing him down, just watching the ball drop to him as he volleys it in. Like, they were in a terrible team.
Yeah.
And yet they nearly equalised.
Yeah. I think with Roy Keane and the team, we probably would have beaten them 4 or 5-0 and not had any real scares.
I actually think McCarthy might have rested Roy Keane for that game.
That is possible, yeah. But he'd have him on the bench. You could bring him on if he needed, if the lads needed it. Or you'd hear him shouting from the bench.
That's it. Look, just a sort of vocal role from the bench, yeah. A speaking captain.
Which brings us to Spain then, who, again, for people picking it up now, Spain post, you know, 2008 and 10 and 12 and that Barcelona team, Spain were a big country, but they'd always flattered to deceive a bit at World Cups and stuff. So they weren't necessarily the world beaters that we know them to be now, but they were a good team.
Yeah, they were. They were a very good team. And again, they were better than us, you know. I mean, they were miles better than us, let's be honest, you know. But I don't know. I think there's a possibility we could have won that match because Spain, like a lot of teams, and I'm thinking of France, and I'm thinking of Portugal, and I'm thinking of Argentina, they arrived at that tournament looking pretty, pretty jaded. They weren't, I mean, they weren't like Spain teams we'd seen in the past. I mean, they were definitely less than the sum of their parts. I think that's the match that, especially when you think of how it all unfolded, you know, we're chasing it, you know, we get the equaliser, we're 1-0 down, we equalise from the penalty spot.
Robbie Keane hasn't taken one for a year and a half for his club, now for his country, Robbie Keane, big man! Just don't go home
And then injury time or extra time comes, and Spain were down to 10 men. They used all their substitutes, and they had an injury. I can't even remember who it was.
Was it Albelda, maybe? Like
yes. Yeah. But they're down to 10 men. And Mick McCarthy didn't notice. Or if he did notice, he didn't tell the team. Because I remember being in the mix zone after the match and saying, you know, saying to Gary Breen, you know, how did you feel when you saw that Spain were down to 10 men in extra time? And he said, were they? So
you knew it in the stands or in the press area.
Yeah. Yeah. We knew it like within sort of 60 seconds. And I suppose, you know, you could say we have an advantage in that we're looking down at an elevation of the pitch. So it's easy to, it actually catches your eye, the fact that there's one fewer Spanish jerseys on the field, but McCarthy's looking at it from pitch level. But it just struck everyone, I think, as very tactically naive, that at the start of extra time, the first thing a manager would usually do is sort of, you know, look at the opposition and see are they lining out any differently for extra time, like do they one extra player at the back, you know, are they gonna pack midfield, are they gonna pack the defense, are they gonna play one up front? And nobody on the Irish bench seemed to do this calculation, you know, seemed to even just count the jerseys. And I think if Roy Keane was on the field, he would certainly have known that Spain were down to 10 men. And of course, you have 30 minutes of extra time. If you know you're playing against a team that's a player light, you just play differently. You know, you stretch them, you use the wings more. And that was absolutely sinful, really, looking back. I mean, you know, I don't look back on the Germany match and feel, you know, that's where we lost our opportunity to go really far in this World Cup, you know, because even if we'd beaten Germany and won the group, you know, our route to the final is still Paraguay, USA and South Korea, which is actually pretty, you know, pretty difficult. But this was a real chance, I think, you know, to do something special. And I think Spain were there for the beat. And I think Spain were out on their feet in extra time. And you could kind of see that when they went and played South Korea in the quarterfinal, that they were just exhausted. You know, they just didn't have it in them to beat South Korea. But I think that 30 minutes of extra time, like Spain were just so relieved when that match went to penalties. They were just so relieved that a penalty shootout, they have at least a 50-50 chance of coming through this match. But, you know, if we had been down to 10 men playing that Spain team with 11, we would have lost.
Yeah. I mean, you'd certainly think there was other experienced players there, but certainly Keane wouldn't have let that go by and wouldn't have missed it. Hopefully you'd have got the goal, but we all see, you know, you see teams against 10 men who don't. But I totally agree. I think those 30 minutes is the big failure in that World Cup. I mean, with or without Keane, you look at it and go, we played three teams who were better than us. And in 90 minutes, we probably outperformed our own ability in those games over the course of the 90 minutes. We underperformed against the team who were worse than us. And in the 30 minutes that we had that opportunity against a team who on paper were better than us, but a man light probably weren't, we blew it.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough as well. And even going into the penalty shootout, I think to have Roy Keane there taking a penalty would have, you know, I mean, he would have taken a penalty. Of course he would. Yeah. But I think he would have made sure that one or two of the senior players stood up and took penalties as well. You know, I know Niall Quinn said in his book that he really regretted looking back that he didn't step forward and offer to take a penalty, and he let players with less experience take them. And I think Keane would have taken Niall Quinn by the scruff of the neck
and dragged him to the spot.
The penalty spot if need be. I mean, you know, Niall Quinn had taken penalties and scored penalties at club level, you know, and I think he really should have taken a penalty. And look, Shea Given should have saved one, you know. Not always down to players to score them, you know. You would expect your keeper maybe to save one as well. But I think that's the match for me. that sort of changes that changes that World Cup. But even allowing for that, you know, our route through is still it's still kind of South Korea, Germany, and Brazil in the final, you know.
Because I don't know about you, but apart from Brazil, who were a very good front three, and they had, you know, Cafu was very good, and, you know, Roberto Carlos and stuff like that, but there wasn't really other standout teams in it. So, you know, from Germany, we went toe-to-toe with. England probably look back on it as a tournament that had they not drawn Brazil, they maybe could have gone further and left behind. But really from, you know, Senegal and Turkey and all of the South Korea, the US, Paraguay, you know, the bounce of a ball or noticing your opponents were down to 10 men, almost any team could have gone two rounds further than they did or gone home two rounds earlier than they did, with probably the exception of Brazil.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. It was one of those World Cups that was just, you know, prime for an outsider, you know, to do well. You know, like Senegal got to the quarterfinals, South Korea and Turkey got to the semifinals. I mean, that was really extraordinary. I mentioned it earlier, like a lot of teams came to that World Cup either tired or carrying injuries. The club season was getting longer at the time, you know, especially with the expansion of the Champions League. And you could actually see that the players were exhausted. And this is kind of an extra month of football that's being put on them at the end of the season. And you could just kind of, a lot of players are kind of coming towards the end of their time as well. France lost on their first match, the opening day of the World Cup to Senegal. And Zidane was injured, and, you know, they were champions. They went out without even scoring a goal. Which was amazing, like, you know. And then, you know, Portugal, the team of Figo and Rui Costa, who just looked just outstanding in the qualifiers, out in the first round too. Argentina went out in the first round. Italy went out in the first knockout phase. I remember we were talking about this when we were at the World Cup, and we were saying that while it's great fun seeing, you know, all the big teams go out, you kind of got a sense that you were going to suffer for it later on in the tournament with the quality of the football. And I think that was really the case. Brazil were really the only standout team. Germany got to the final by winning all of their knockout matches 1-0, you know, doing just enough. They were lucky to win a couple of those matches as well, you know, and Balak was their engine, really. But as soon as they lost him, they just, through suspension for the final, they just look so ordinary, you know. Brazil were really the only outstanding team at that tournament.
You look at Balak then in Germany, and kind of you take Balak out, and Germany were very ordinary. And, you know, is that a really striking parallel for, you know, what the limit could have been for Ireland? We could have won a game 1-2, you know, if we had our Balak in the team, winning the odd game 1-0, just get enough, and it could have been us in the final. I mean, is that what we're looking at, really?
I don't think so, because I think the thing we haven't discussed so far is what it takes to win a tournament. And Germany are a classic example of that. You know, they start off slowly, and they can go through the rounds doing just enough to win matches. We had absolutely no experience of ever doing anything like that in our history. You know, this was our third World Cup. And when I say doing anything like that, I mean winning matches. You know, we were always capable of winning, a sort of standalone match, a big kind of cup final type match, like Ireland v England in Stuttgart at Euro 88, or Ireland against Italy at Giant Stadium in 94. You know, these sort of transient moments of magic. But it's just one match. And we played, you know, five matches at Italian 90, won none of them in 90 minutes. We played four matches at US 94, won one of them in 90 minutes. And we'd played four matches at the 2002 World Cup, and we'd won one of them in 90 minutes against Saudi Arabia. So we didn't have this track record of being able to build through tournaments and go, you know, sometimes doing just enough to win a match, but putting the opposition away 1-0. And I think you kind of need experience of that to be able to do it. Like, we weren't a tournament team. And while it is tempting to kind of look at the various routes to the final, you know, and like I said, if we'd beaten Germany, it's Paraguay, USA, South Korea. And there's a little bit of you thinks, well, yeah, we're capable of winning all of those, beating all those matches on our day. But the point is, we never did, you know. I could see us losing all three of those matches. We were probably better than Paraguay. Paraguay were a little bit flaky, actually. But you know, I could have seen us definitely losing to the USA, and certainly to South Korea, who just, there was something about South Korea in that tournament, and they did something that we were never capable of doing, and that was sort of building through a tournament. And they were very fortunate in that they suspended the league in South Korea for the season, just so that the national team could prepare for the World Cup. And they had, you know, a really, really great coach in Goose Hiddink. And they were incredibly fit. I have to be careful here because I'm always wary of libeling people. But let's just say they had astonishing energy.
They had a few favorable decisions as well.
And they got these favorable decisions, you know, especially against Spain, who had, you know, I had two goals, perfectly good goals in my view, disallowed. And, you know, one was for the before the cross went in, the ball was supposed to have crossed the line. I remember Helguera had to be dragged away from the referee at the end. I mean, he really felt that they'd been robbed. And that this was a hometown decision. But there was also a momentum behind South Korea that, you know, they had the home crowd. I remember watching a match on a big screen in Seoul, actually. It was that match, South Korea against Spain. And there's, you know, like 250,000 people on the street watching this match on a series of giant screens. And the atmosphere was just incredible. It was amazing. And the people were just so passionate. Everybody was behind the team. That's what I mean about momentum. And we didn't have momentum. You know, we'd never really had momentum at a tournament. We'd always kind of stumbled through the qualifying stages, got to a, you know, even in recent tournaments since then, you know, we stumbled through the qualifying stages. We get, you know, a late goal in a match that sends us through, or a series of results that work to our benefit. And then we go into the knockout stages and we lose and we say, oh yeah, but didn't we do well? You know, Ireland have never been in a tournament where I felt we were building towards a series of three or four great results in the knockout stages that would bring us to a final. So it's all very well, I think, just to look at opposition, look at Paraguay and, you know, look at the USA and look at South Korea and say we could beat them. But I think it takes more than just, you know, just sort of saying we're better than them on paper. There's also the fact that, kind of inevitable almost, given that we weren't a team that scored a lot of goals, that at least one of those matches was going to go to penalties. And I don't think we were that, you know, as we showed against Spain, you know, we weren't particularly
comfortable or competent.
We weren't comfortable or competent. No,
I was going to say it's a very sober and sensible and thorough analysis, and I think I probably agree, because I think whenever anyone talks about Saipan and Roy Keane not being there, they just seem to assume that we automatically would have gotten to the semi-final against Germany. South Korea being a complete afterthought in most people's thoughts. But I don't remember in any tournament in my lifetime before this one or after, the kind of, you talked about it there, Paul, the frenzied hysteria of the momentum behind the team and the fans supporting them, and even the pace that they played out on the pitch was terrifying. It was crazy, and they just finally ran out of steam against Germany, but they got some really astonishing hometown decisions. They got one really crazy one in the Italy game as well. But the idea that Ireland would have just gone past Spain and then breezed past this South Korea team into the semi-final is so disrespectful to what was a really excellent team.
Lee Young-pyo with the cross.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, when I think of that South Korea team, I think of Argentina in 1978, you know, and what the Dutch players said about them, that they kind of felt there was just a weight of history and expectation and everything behind Argentina that they just couldn't deal with. And when you're in, you know, when you're in, you're playing in Argentina's backyard, or when you're playing in South Korea's backyard, and you feel that, like, you feel it every day. I mean, the sense of, you mentioned hysteria there, and that's what it was, you know. They were manic, the people, like, at the games, in the streets. It was just, but there was nothing, it wasn't just intensity. I mean, that kind of makes it sound like South Korea with this sort of headless chicken team, but they weren't, you know. They had some really, really good players. They had been preparing for just this tournament for 6 months. So they had an advantage over everybody else. You know, every other player arrived at the World Cup, you know, in various states of exhaustion, except those who'd been injured for the last few months of the season. Everybody had had a long season behind them. And South Korea was just completely fresh, you know, and they'd been training like an army team. And I think we would have really struggled against South Korea. I think we would have lost to South Korea.
Yeah, if we got there. I mean, even Keane, who, to kind of, you know, we're focusing on here as a player who had won it all, even at that stage, wasn't an experienced player in the tournament mode either, when sort of all the normal rules and timelines of a normal season go out the window, and that, you know, living in it, you know, have the importance of that momentum and living with the players for you know, 2 or 3 weeks on end. Even he, who, you know, had been there, done everything, had dragged teams to victory, he hadn't done tournament play either. I mean, USA 94 apart. But so, you know, he wasn't the missing piece who was going to solve that riddle either.
No, because Roy Keane's personality wouldn't have allowed for that, you know. Yeah. Like Roy Keane was a figure who drew the players together on the pitch. But can you imagine, you know, Roy Keane spending 6 months with that Irish team, you know? They would have all ended up broken men, you know, and he'd probably be the first to admit that himself. I mean, he couldn't last a week on an island in the Pacific with them. Yeah. So he was never going to do 3 or 4 months. I mean, he was good at sort of building team confidence, but I would say he wasn't good at building squad confidence, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like,
he wasn't going to be the player, you know, to put his arm around, you know, Jason McAteer or Clinton Morrison or Kevin Kilbane if they're having a bad day. You know, he was just a different kind of character. And I don't think you could have done with Roy Keane.
No.
What Goose Iddink did with the Korean team. If Roy Keane had his way, I think he would have just come in and played the matches and left immediately afterwards, which is kind of what he was doing at the end. I mean, there was all that controversy just before they went to the World Cup where he was missing in action for Niall Quinn's testimonial. And, you know, Mick McCarthy, not for the first time in his time as Ireland manager, is asked at a press conference, "Where's your captain?" And he's shrugging. He has absolutely no idea when he's arriving. But that was kind of, I suppose that was all part of the sort of power play that was going on between them at the time.
There's a part of me that goes, if Ireland had to do without Keane, the player, actually the least worst option is to do it in the intensity of a tournament where actually maybe you sort of, because of all the problems that you avoid with Keane, the man, not being around, if you had to do it without him, you may get away with more in the high intensity of a month of a tournament than if he'd missed an entire qualification campaign or if Manchester United missed him over a season. But again,
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah. The other team we could potentially have played en route to the final, you know, if we're taking the, you know, the idea that we beat Germany and then we play Paraguay, the USA and South Korea. Like the USA, I think there's a very good, there's a decent chance the USA would have beaten us with Keane. I mean, I know you're probably goggling this, right?
No.
But I mean, they kind of ran out of steam a little bit in that tournament. But their opening match, they went 3-0 up against Portugal in, I think, half an hour or something, or 35 minutes or something like that, you know. And the Portuguese goalkeeper, Victor Bailly, who Roy Keane stepped on, he got a sending off in the Champions League. He had an absolute nightmare that day. But the USA looked quite good, you know. I think they would have given us a really tough match. They put Mexico out in the first knockout round. And Mexico looked quite decent, you know. They were certainly favourites to win that match. But I think it would have been an interesting game anyway. I think there would have been a really, really difficult team for us to play against, because they were just really unpredictable.
All of this is starting to sound like we don't think it would have made a huge amount of difference to Ireland in the World Cup, actually.
This keeps happening to us, Ger.
See, we keep torturing ourselves with this image of Roy Keane holding up the
trophy. The one thing that I've always wondered about is, do you know the way there are tournaments that we just associate with players? And it doesn't have to be one that they won. I mean, you know, you think of 74, it's Johan Cruyff you go to rather than a German. Maradona 86, Zidane 98, they own the tournament. Could it have been a World Cup that, you know, now in his, you know, 20 years later in his 50s, Keane looks back on and went, that was my World Cup?
Oh, I don't know. We're taking an awful lot for granted in saying that, right? Like Roy Keane was, there is no doubt Roy Keane, the decline had started at that point. And Roy Keane was finding it very, very difficult to play two matches in a week. Never mind three matches in 10 days. You know, to get to the final, you know, we're talking about these mythical matches that we could have won, right? They take place, it's three matches you have to win over the course of 10 days. And Roy Keane's body was really aging at that point. And he had knee trouble. I don't know. That's the answer. I don't know. I suspect he wouldn't have been the Zidane of the tournament. I think he would have made a difference to us, maybe a 10% difference to us in some of those matches. I think we almost certainly would have beaten Spain had he been on the pitch for extra time. But whether he still had it in him to sort of carry us that far and to be the stand, I don't think he would have been the standout player of the tournament, to be honest. I think, you know, like Brazil, you mentioned Cafu, Roberto Carlos, Rivaldo, Ronaldinho and Ronaldo the first. I mean, there's five players who certainly were better than him, you know. I think Balak was definitely more influential than him. I think whatever happens, we wouldn't have been looking back on it as Roy Keane's tournament now.
Sobering and sensible again.
So if
I'm ruining this game.
If Ireland don't do a huge amount better, it doesn't massively change Keane's legacy. Did we lose the run of ourselves?
Yes. Yeah, I think we certainly lost the run of ourselves. Well, I think it also, it kind of allows us off the hook a little bit as well, because it's that thing that Roy Keane always talks about again. It's, we're happy to say, you know, well, we didn't win, but didn't we do really well in the circumstances? And that's you know, the great sadness about Roy Keane leaving, because we will never know, and we will always talk about it in those terms. And the tournament, you know, the whole theme of the qualifying tournament was the opposite of that, that we would leave absolutely nothing behind and we would qualify and we would never be left bemoaning, you know, a lost point along the way or a bad refereeing decision or a, you know, a goal that wasn't awarded or something like that. But Roy Keane leaves, and of course, 20 years on, we're still talking about it as one of the great what ifs.
Thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Outside the Box. If you think things would have played out very differently, or especially if you think we nailed it, we'd love to hear from you.
Or if you have any ideas for other interesting what ifs, you can get in touch with us on Twitter or Instagram at whatiffootypod, or by email at outsidetheboxwhatif@gmail.com. We hope you tune in again next time. Please tell your friends if you like the show, and even if you didn't, tell them you did. I've been Dave Fleming.
And I've been Jared O'Shea. And this has been Outside the Box.
But if the other parties in this come to you, the FAI, Mick McCarthy, a proud man, the players, if they come to you and say, for the good of the country, we want to find a solution to this, we'd like it to be playing for Ireland, are you willing to meet them halfway?
I want to play for Ireland. We'll have to see. Possibly, yes. But there's nobody wants to play for much as Ireland as me. As I said, I've been involved since I was 15, 14, gone for trials up in Dublin. And this is what it's all about, playing in World Cups. So, hopefully, you never know. You just never know. But, we'll see. It's hurting you, this.
Of course it's hurting me.
Dead right it is.